This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. For the past 40 years, the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra has been creating internationally renowned music and forcing us to rethink the idea of musical collaboration. The all-star musicians of Orpheus perform without a conductor, rehearse, and organize democratically. And along the way, they've made more than 70 albums, noted by critics for having unparalleled energy. Orpheus frequently collaborates with some of today's leading soloists. And last Wednesday's concert in Winston-Salem was no exception. It was part of the Secret Performance Series at Wake Forest University, and their program included Antonio Vivaldi's dynamic Four Seasons featuring violin soloist Ryu Goto. The New York City native sprang upon the scene in 1995 with his performance of the third movement of Paganini's incredibly challenging Violin Concerto No. 1. We're sampling from that live concert recording now. Ryu was 7 years old at the time, attending the Pacific Music Festival held in Sapporo, Japan. The now 25-year-old violinist sensation says back then it was all about hitting the right notes and in tune. Ryu spoke with me by phone from his home in New York.
Living life, you know, sort of having various experiences outside of what you thought was your own comfort zone. And these things, you know, not only build character as an individual, but, you know, it, of course, gives you sort of the fertilizer and for inspiration and creativity. I think that's what's changed mainly. You know, it's not that I've gotten that much better in technique or anything like that. I think the technique is, at least the standard of technique is, you know, everybody's got to have it to, you know, you have to have the tools to convey what you want to do. You know, you have to, so that you have options, you're not limited your options when you're trying to play something or perform something. But, you know, after that, it's all about what you bring to the music. And for me, it's my unique experiences, I think, as a musician and mostly not as a musician, that, and not as a classical musician, that has brought me perspective for the music, I think.
Ryu, what sorts of influences inform your interpretation of Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and what do you enjoy most performing in them? It's a real showcase for the instrument.
Yeah, you know, for me, we're not playing with, like, Baroque instruments or anything like that. And the Four Seasons, you know, there's an entire, you know, poem with, you know, explanations on which part corresponds to which part, et cetera, which voices and which imagery, you know?
The dog barking off in the distance during
the
dog days.
Yeah, and but that, yes, somewhat, you know, I try to follow that somewhat, but the other idea, right, is that, you know, the Four Seasons for us is different from the Four Seasons way back when. The imagery that we associate with the Four Seasons now is just almost completely different, you know? There are only certain aspects that are consistent. But, you know, some of it is consistent. So that's the point where I decide, okay, so what kind of imagery do I want to bring into this, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the interpretive aspect of it. You know, purely from a sort of acoustic aspect, you know, you can make it as simple as you want it or as dramatic as you want it. And that's the beauty of Vivaldi. And you know, you can make it sound very Baroque, very, or even kind of take a romantic approach to it. So I like to really show, it's not exaggerated, but I like to really show what's going on in each section. So I'll take liberties, and Orpheus takes liberties. And, you know, it's okay, you can even take risks in any piece, and Vivaldi's not an exception.
What's it like playing with Orpheus? This is one of those ensembles that does not use a conductor. What's it like playing in that role as soloist, section leader, in a sense? And I guess just Orpheus in general.
Yeah, Orpheus is really probably my favorite orchestras that I play with. They're absolutely wonderful in their musicality. You know, I love the way they work, they rehearse. You know, it's very, very seamless, you know. It's very smooth the way they do it. It's very discussion based, but it's very efficient, and, you know, it's very focused, you know, and It's hard to have that many people do that at the same time.
It seems like it's hard to do that even in a string quartet. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, it really is. Clearly professionals. But the other great thing about it is that they're, you know, extremely high-level players from all over the U.S. And, you know, they have their contracts usually with other universities or conservatories or orchestras. And they do this as a, not recreationally, but it's a project that they embark on. So I think they bring a lot of enjoyment into it. So that's what I love about, you know, working with them. And you can feel that kind of energy, even in rehearsal. And, you know, it's Vivaldi is, I mean, they played it many times. It's perfect for the sort of chamber orchestra, you know.
That's internationally acclaimed violin soloist Ryu Goto. He spoke with me by phone from his home in New York. At the end of our conversation, Ryu shared a distant recollection of having performed once before in Winston-Salem, but he suspected it was 10 to 12 years ago. It turns out it was actually 19 years ago. According to conductor, educator, and former Winston-Salem Symphony conductor Peter Perret, it was back in 1995 that the then 7-year-old Ryu Goto won first prize in the junior division of the Winston-Salem Symphony Youth Artists Competition. Ryu performed the first movement of Paganini's Impossibly Difficult Violin Concerto No. 1 and earned a performance of the piece with the orchestra during their holiday concert. Thank you, Peter Perret, for filling us in. On Wednesday, February 26, 2014, Ryu joined the world-renowned Orpheus Chamber Orchestra in Waite Chapel on the Wake Forest University campus in a performance of Antonio Vivaldi's Four Seasons. It was part of the school's Seacrest performance series. Also on the program was Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 3 and Tchaikovsky's beautiful Serenade for Strings. I attended that performance, and I can tell you that Ryu and Orpheus absolutely rocked. Orpheus cellist Jonathan Spitz joined the group in the 1980s and has been co-artistic director there since 2008. Jonathan was kind enough to talk with me recently by phone from his home in New York, moments after arriving home from an all-night flight from Japan. For you, Jonathan, what's the best part of chamber music making, performing in an ensemble like Orpheus?
I mean, Orpheus is special because, I mean, we're playing in a chamber music, you know, fashion, I mean, without a conductor and making our own decisions about the music. But the fact that we're doing it with symphonic repertoire, you know, repertoire that's associated with conductors, makes it sort of particularly inviting and intriguing for us. The real appeal is being able to really think about the music, not just as kind of a cog in a wheel, the way one can become with a conducted orchestra, but really is that we each bring our own independent musical minds to the rehearsal process, to the performance process. And the result is that there's just more kind of involvement and energy, interconnectedness among the musicians than one finds typically in an orchestra. It's a very personal, kind of gratifying approach to music.
I know Ryu was really intrigued by your all's process and decision-making and how efficient your rehearsals were. And that just kind of dumbfounded me. I'm thinking, you know, no conductor, no one person running things. How could it be more efficient? Could you flesh that out for me a little bit? How does a typical Orpheus rehearsal work collectively and sharing musical ideas?
The key to our process is that we have a lot of leaders and we rotate leadership. So each piece has a different set of principals, different concertmaster, different principal cello, et cetera, through the orchestra. So for each piece, we kind of concentrate the decision-making among that group of core players. So it isn't really completely a free-for-all. On the other hand, if there's a musician, you know, in the ensemble who's sitting in the back who doesn't like the way things are going, they'll definitely speak up. But it's just sort of the concentration of the rehearsal sort of amongst the principals and between the principals and their sections that does give us a certain measure of efficiency. And it's just that we're experienced, dedicated musicians who can really identify what the problems are of a given piece. We're very good and quick at solving issues, ensemble issues and musical issues both.
I was wondering how the different levels of listening and that you experience within this particular ensemble and what that can mean in terms of the performance.
That's a great question. that is really the key to the whole thing. So some of the ways in which we operate as listeners while playing in the ensemble. So if I'm playing, let's say I'm sitting third chair cello for a given piece, I'm listening intently to the rest of the section just to blend my own playing into that section. At the same time, we're all listening to the entire orchestra just to see, you know, kind of that musically things are happening the way they should, that cello section itself is fitting into the orchestra in the way it's supposed to. And then there's, when we're playing with the soloist, it's doing all of that, but listening intensely to the soloist's timing and nuance and dynamics. Some of the things that we're listening for include balancing, just that we're bringing our part out appropriately within the ensemble, you know, just Goldilocks, not too loud, not too soft, but in a way that really represents the importance of the line by how loud we play it. We're listening, of course, all the time for intonation, for playing in tune. That doesn't happen by itself. We're all the time listening to each other for in terms of nuances, that we have to match our nuances, you know, just the emphasis of the music, the shape of the music, the phrasing. One of the works we're playing is the Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings. It has such a range of tone color and kind of harmonic color. And so, you know, you're really listening that we're fulfilling the potential beauty of that piece, just in terms of the sheer sound of the orchestra.
Tchaikovsky, the Serenade for Strings. How do you know within the context of this great work? I mean, this is one of the few pieces that I think Tchaikovsky himself even liked of his own. How do you know when you're getting that right, Jonathan? What do you feel? What's going on that when you know that blend is, this is going to be a really meaningful performance or satisfying?
The first thing we look for and we talk about a lot on our rehearsals is the range. We really try to make sure that our soft playing is as intimate and, you know, that it has this kind of personal touch when we play soft. With Orpheus, it's always been our way that we play big. We, you know, I think we're playing with 17 strings right now for this program, and it's easy for us to sound bigger than that. So that our work is to make sure that the softs are really not just soft, but really beautiful, and, you know, that we give the full range of tonal color that way. When I'm playing a performance of the Serenade that feels right, there's a kind of ecstatic quality. It's just, it's so, so high energy and so exuberant, particularly in the outside movements. You know, that it's a great adrenaline rush to play it, and I think to listen to it.
I can imagine. Some exultant moments in another piece in the program. I guess it begins with Brandenburg 3. It seems like the perfect piece for a conductorless chamber ensemble of strings in many ways.
I mean, it really is chamber music. It's basically 10 individual parts plus harpsichord. So it's each person's playing a solo. But the way Bach interweaves those different solo voices creates these different kind of teams, like a shifting sets of teams within the piece. Virtuoso piece. It has a kind of lightness, and typically the way we play this piece, it has a kind of a velocity to it that I think really suits the music very well.
with regard to the Vivaldi Four Seasons, I thought it was interesting. Ryu was speaking about his biggest challenge in this piece is bringing out for him the meanings of the different seasons in his own 21st century language, and kind of based on what he sees and hears and feels about seasons today. And then I'm thinking just now how Orpheus evolves along those lines in the context of you're playing with all these different people with their own conceptions.
I mean, it's been really one of the benefits of Orpheus. I mean, very early on, we were collaborating with great soloists. And it's kind of been, how to put it, it's like from the earliest days of the group, 41 years ago, it was clearly a priority for us to collaborate with musicians whose ideas we're really interested in and to give them the opportunity to work with an orchestra, not just through the conductor, but sort of really speaking to each of the musicians of the orchestra. So the collaboration is going across the whole stage rather than just being focused between two parties, you know, one of whom is an intermediary. Hmm. I'm sounding like I'm against conductors. I'm really not. I have great admiration for the great conductors I've gotten to play under. But this, you know, when there isn't a conductor there, each of the musicians is just responsible for a bigger share. And that includes, you know, in the way that we collaborate with our soloists.
Hey, what do you think about this? I don't even know if you'd call it a movement, but I've seen several chamber ensembles ditching their music these days and getting into playing from memory, even in the context of fairly large ensembles. What's your take on that approach?
I think it's great. I think it's something that we certainly could do with certain repertoire. It's an interesting question. I mean, on the one hand, I'm going to kind of answer both sides. On the one hand, what really matters is how does the music sound? And if the musicians on stage are uncomfortable or focusing primarily on what notes are coming up, in other words, if the memory is kind of only superficial, then, you know, there's a kind of a sort of level of anxiety. And what I know, like as a soloist, if I'm performing something by memory that's not really deep in my bones, there's less nuance. So I think there's a danger of playing by memory for an orchestra that the nuances will become lessened. If the memorization is really successful and profound, then there's a kind of a freedom and an interactivity amongst the musicians that is fantastic. I think those are sort of the pros and cons. It isn't something that Orpheus has done, but we don't rule anything out, for sure.
Stay tuned. Well, Jonathan, I appreciate you taking time out, especially given your recent arrival back in the States, to talk with me.
It was great talking to you. I love your questions. I think your perspective on things is fantastic.
Orpheus Chamber Orchestra cellist and co-artistic director Jonathan Spitz. Over the past 40 years, Orpheus has made 70 acclaimed recordings, won Grammy Awards, and pushed the chamber music-making envelope forward more than just about any other ensemble in the world. Earlier this week, Orpheus played a concert in Wake Chapel on the Wake Forest University campus as part of the school's Seacrest Artist Series. Next up in the series will be acclaimed pianist Jiayin Wang and her winning combination of superb musicianship and technical brilliance on Thursday, April 10th in Brendel Recital Hall on the Wake campus. You'll find links to the complete Seacrest performance calendar at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we'll take a short break now. Eddie Garcia is here with this preview of the Carolina Film and Video Festival, and Mary Dalton shares her Oscar picks with us next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.